Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for joining us for Book Publishing, Delivering Only What's Relevant, sponsored by Canon Solutions America. I'm delighted you could join us this afternoon. We're going to be talking about the fact that in today's market, everybody really only wants that information that's relevant and meaningful to them. In this instance, books are really no exception. It could be a custom book designed for classroom education. It could be a custom content published magazine, or it could be something that's integral to your marketing strategy that links to custom content. Basically, what we're finding is that it's an effective business strategy to reach targeted customers as well as students in a classroom by delivering content that links with their specific needs, their interests, and their lifestyles. And so today what we're going to be doing is covering a number of topics. I'm joined, first of all, by Todd Allen, and Todd's the Director of Product Management for Airbook. And I'm also joined by Roland Oschenbein, who's a principal at Bolton Strategic Associates. And what we'll be covering, before I get started, I do want to cover a couple of tips to make sure that you enjoy the webinar. First of all, if you're having any technical difficulties, just let us know by clicking on the Q&A box, or you can troubleshoot by clicking the help widget below. If you've got questions, and we'll be taking questions throughout the session today, all you have to do is submit them via the Q&A box. Make sure that you've disabled pop-up blockers. And if you want to see what the console can do, there's a Tips for Attendees widget, and it'll give you a complete rundown. What I'm going to do first to kick it off is talk a little bit about what the importance of relevance is and what we're seeing in the book market on a broad basis. And then you'll get market perspectives from both Todd as well as Roland. We'll wrap up with some recommendations and conclusions. And again, we'll take your questions throughout the session. Now, to get started, one of the big things that you've got to take a look at when you think about the book market is it represents the largest increase in terms of movement from traditional print technology to digital pages in the industry. And we actually track applications and the number of digital pages produced. And the projections are that the book market, in terms of digitally produced pages, will increase by more than 51 billion pages between now and 2016. That equates to a 14% compound annual growth rate in digitally produced pages. Now, we've had several webinars on the topic, but there's two components that are real drivers to this. The first is the fact that publishers want to mitigate risk. They don't want to get stuck with a huge inventory of unused, unsellable books. But the second component is really the concept of delivering relevant information. And in fact, when you think about the market today, everything we see, feel, and touch is focused on giving you a more customized experience. It's no different with a book. In fact, when you think about it, what people want is they want that book, and they really want it their way. Now, when we talk about custom books, the typical definition is it's a book of predefined form that's partially customizable, either in content or form. They're typically produced with on-demand digital print technology to ensure that the customization has very little effect on the overall unit cost. And I tell everybody, I want to give you some examples of the kinds of things that we see today. First of all, I say that drive for relevance starts early. You can go into Pottery Barn for Kids, or you can go into I See Me or Frecklebox, and you can build out for your son or your daughter, a personalized storybook that features them as the hero or the heroine of that story. Prices on these range anywhere from $29 to, at Pottery Barn, a little more expensive, but $44 a book. Now, that doesn't end, though. What we see is that it continues into high school and elementary experiences. And, in fact, Pearson works with teachers to build out custom science labs, and basically what that teacher can do is, based on the interests of his specific classroom, he can customize labs for whatever he wants to cover in that specific semester, quarter, term of educational experience at a high school level. And that same thing continues on into college. And what you see are a number of different options for customizing course materials across a number of different publishers. I can select chapters. I can look at any number of different mechanisms for creating that custom book. And as I tell everybody, it is encompassed in romance. I can go at and build out a book called YourNovel.com and be the star in my own romance novel, customized just for me. And then I tell everybody, sometimes when the romance ends, you turn to food. And so what you've got to do is look at mechanisms, and in this case, I can create that personalized cookbook. I can pull recipes from other sources, and I can add those that were favorites of my mom and build out that custom cookbook for $24.99. And then when you've had it with the custom cookbooks, it may be time for your customized fitness routine. And they've actually got a book out by Kyle Leon, which is called Customized Fat Loss Training. And what you do is you feed in specifications about your specific situation, and you get back a customized book talking about what you need to do to get fit. And, of course, the last thing is we're seeing a massive focus in the B2B market space on things like custom media, where I can do custom magazine advertising, I can do custom content predicated on the specific audience that I want to reach. Now, if that is a bit of backdrop, I would tell you that the opportunity for customization and blending that with publishing is unlimited. And I think the only limit is really your imagination, because people really do want it their way. Now what I'm going to do is I am going to turn it over to Todd. Todd's going to talk a little bit about some of the changing dynamics that he sees in the marketplace. Todd, take it away.
Okay. Well, welcome to the airplane view. Let's start out with a little overview of how this stuff is changing. First off, it's always good to know who you're dealing with. I'm the Director of Product Management over at Airbook.com. I've been a columnist, analyst, reporter, title change a little bit for Publishers Weekly for, well, somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 years. And I'm occasionally in the academic business. I spent 5 years teaching e-business at Columbia College, Chicago, which means I'm extremely qualified to drone on and on and on. Quick word about where I'm currently at, that's Airbook. We do digital editions for graphical books. It's really hard to format graphics. We make it very easy, just a couple of clicks. We do native retail. The new thing is selling inside the social stream, Twitter, Pinterest, what have you. We actually have been doing some print-on-demand biases up front. We have a strategic partnership with Lightning Source, which is Ingram. I've personally used them for about 10 years, so questions about that I can field later. Airbook.com is our URL. Another thing that you might want to look into if you're on the solo side of this is the Self-Publishers Association, BookWorks for short. It's an organization started up by Betty Sargent, who used to be editor-in-chief of William Morrow, and it's basically there to steer people in the right direction if they're going solo on this. And Betty, frankly, Betty knows everyone. It's a little bit scary, but she's been through pretty much every facet of this and is an excellent resource if you're going in that direction. So when we start talking about custom content, print-on-demand, e-books, it's time to start thinking about things in terms of databases. So we're going to step back, and everybody's been to a website. Most websites these days are run on a content management system, which means the actual web pages are just fields in the database. The headline at the top of a website, that's a field in the database. The body and the text, that's a field in the database. The web page is just a template, and when you click on the link, it sends a couple variables, pulls the content out of the database, throws it on the web page. They call those things dynamically generated. Is there really a difference between pulling up a story on a web page out of a database and printing a book out of a database? Maybe. Maybe not. If you take this to the logical extension, custom books are really just the same thing as a content management system on a database. There's a little more setup to it, and most people aren't thinking that way. But the logical extension of this is just about pulling out content when you need it. It could be automated. It could be manual. And we'll show a few examples of that a little later in the slideshow. But this brings up the question, is there a difference between a printer like you have on your desktop and a printing press? And that's kind of really dependent on what your printer is. It used to be if you wanted to get a book bound, you had to go to a printer or else do a three-hole punch and bind it that way or do a ring binder or something cheesy like that. In this day and age, there are essentially large printers you can have in your office. They're small enough for that. That will do a square bound, a perfect bound, as you sometimes say, book. You can actually do that in color now. It really is a brave new world in this case. You might see the name Canon on this seminar. They provide things like that, and I believe that's a picture of a Canon book printer. So just to get our minds looking ahead in this direction, you don't actually have to send flat files anymore if you're so set up. And you can actually print a book in your office if you have the right equipment. Larger companies frequently do that. So if we're getting into custom publishing, there's a few different flavors that exist. It's one of those things where a lot of people use the term for different meanings. The first thing you normally get is the short run or the one-off. Print on demand is really something that is a financial benefit to you. Somewhere between 750 to 1,000 copies, if you're under that, you're better off going print-on-demand. When you start getting over 1,000, you know, depending on your paper stock, whether you're in color or not, it's usually better to do an offset run from a financial perspective. That's just how it works. This is also really good for niche audiences, things that a particular publisher might not have enough of an audience for or not have an initial demand for. I'll give you an example. I have a textbook, The Economics of Web Comics. I've sold over the last 6 years somewhere between 1,500 and 2,000 copies of it. Have I ever sold more than 500 in a year? No, but it adds up over the number of years. I never would have been able to do a economical offset run of it, but if you put it on print on demand, you have no inventory. You don't have to worry about it going out of print and just accumulates over the years. A lot of people work under this model, and it's especially good if you have a specific small audience. It's now possible to do a book for an audience of 500 that, you know, normally you'd go with something like a chapbook. The next flavor is really people doing this concerned about quick turnaround time. How long does it take to put out a book with the normal publishing cycle? Yeah, you're talking a year normally. Every now and then you'll get something rushed out, usually a government commission report that'll be thrown out in a couple of months, or possibly if you have a pop star, you'll get a biography on them if they've had number one hit in a short amount of time. But normally it just takes a long time in normal solicitation cycles. So if you're doing a technology book, something about a new programming language, it's terrible for that. The book may come out in the language already has a new update and it's not in the book. If you're doing a current event book, you need lead time for that. So one of the big advantages of print-on-demand technology in the e-books, they're now. If you upload an e-book, you might have 1 or 2 days for iBooks or Amazon to process it. If you're doing a print-on-demand book, if you're selling it directly, you put up the link, you're in business. Otherwise, maybe a week to get populated out to the online bookstores, but, any more, it's a day or two there, too. So if you're doing something that has a component where it can age quickly, this is really the way to go about doing that.
Todd, you mentioned that you do – one of the questions that just came in, you mentioned you do these custom comic books, or you have a custom book on comics. If I take a look at lead time, if you get orders for that – how long does it take you to get those turned around today?
See, I usually I'll bring those through the online bookstores with Ingram's wholesale model. So it depends a little bit if it's on stock. If it's out of stock and you're ordering it through Amazon, it'll be less than a week.
Okay.
If you're ordering them directly yourself, you know, figure 7 to 10 days. Could be a little faster, could be a little longer. Depends on the time of year. If you're ordering, you know, the second week of December, things tend to stack up a little bit. But you know,
yep.
That goes with every industry. So it's not necessarily second day, but, you know, Amazon has some proprietors. They also have their own in-house create space. And if they feel they're too backed up on something, generally speaking, they'll kick it over to Ingram just to keep the supply line going.
Okay.
So there's a couple of fail-safes depending on which angle you're coming at it from.
Thanks.
No problem. So the final thing is the blurred line of the independent author to reference popular music these days. You may have noticed in publishing that the mid-list is having a little bit of a crisis right now, and a lot of the people that have been mid-list are becoming independent authors. Now, this gets interesting because if you have a book listing on Amazon's website or Barnes & Noble's website, the online bookstores don't necessarily care who the publisher is. You have people putting up ebooks. You have people also doing print-on-demand issues that used to be solid mid-list writers, and they've discovered that they can make more money per copy, significantly more money per copy, by publishing things themselves. So you're seeing a phenomenon where as long as the writer has the right services, they may need to get a cover artist, they may need to get a freelance editor, they may need to get a freelance publicist. But with the infrastructure that exists today between you know firms like Amazon and Ingram, Lightning Source, Smashwords for ebook distribution, iBooks actually has a larger share of the ebooks than people realize. But if you could hook into these services, it's entirely possible for a person to be their own publisher. And we're starting to see some people getting wealthy off it. It's interesting and definitely wasn't something that could readily happen 10 years ago. So might be interesting to do a timeline on this. Let's start out with the dark ages. Way back in the 90s when I was in college, when I talk about printing things out of a database like a computer, I actually got tasked to do that for some specialty publishing for the Kellogg School of Management. I was actually an undergrad there. I was pre-admitted to Kellogg, but I never got around to going. Basically, they started out with a database of all their students, a photo, the name was a field. Where they went to undergrad was a database field. What their last job was a database field. And we did a couple of things with that. The first thing we'd do was we'd create a form, much like a web page template, and we'd sort to see who was in each class, and we'd print out the face and the name, where they went to undergrad and the last job, and we'd just have a sheet of basically what you'd call Facebook profiles many years before Facebook. And we used to have the joke, this time if the professor doesn't like you, it is personal. And we'd run that for every class in the semester. And as we started to run this out, we realized that, you know, every time you go to college, you get a picture book of everybody that's in your class. And all the data was already in the database, and we were already using it to generate class lists. So now remember, this is before modern printing technology. This would have been about 1993. We took one of the computers over to the printers, hooked it up to their system, again, generated a template that was what we wanted the book to look like, and just printed directly to film. Film went to the press. You actually have a book generated by a database, which was not that common back then. These days, these sort of applications are a lot easier because the database systems are integrated into printing systems. You can export to a PDF. You don't have to print the film. But when I talk about all this custom stuff, this is really, you know, late 80s, early 90s. That's when it first started to come online as a feasibility. Print on demand was the next thing that really started getting these things going, and I guess that's a large part of why we're here. The first real big event there was Lightning Source over with Ingram, because a lot of these other outfits, you'll see a lot of people going after amateur authors, getting them in the system through this. They'll subcontract out Lightning Source. So this was the first big entry point to put print-on-demand in the publishing world. Long about 2005, Amazon decided they needed to get a piece of the action, so they bought another one of the print-on-demand operations called BookSurge. They rebranded that as CreateSpace and started folding in audio and video and other things into that. That's actually how CreateSpace came about. Now, print-on-demand, especially in the early stages, was probably a little better for nonfiction topics than it was for genre fiction. And you know, if you're in 97 to 2005, you still have a significant stigma against the self-publishers. Attitudes take a little longer to change with that, and that was definitely an issue when you were just strictly dealing with print. The next thing that happened, it was really Amazon driving the boat, and that's the emergence of e-books. E-books have been around forever. I mean, back on Usenet, if you're old enough to remember Usenet, the text-only internet system that predated the web, you could get ASCII file e-books if you really wanted them back then. When e-books really took off is when Amazon came out with a Kindle back in 2007. Things just started to ramp up from there. You get to 2010, e-books start outselling hardcovers on Amazon. Now, the thing that was really driving the e-books was genre fiction, science fiction. Romance was a big one. Paranormal romance, specifically, was high up there. Mystery novels, that sort of thing. You also get things like technical manuals where the turnaround time, it's just so much easier to get the e-book because you know it's going to be up to date. And as you start to see the e-books really take off, and especially when they start outselling the hardcovers and competing with the paperbacks, that's when you see the self-publishing stigma start to diminish. Now, it's still there to a certain extent, but you've got enough mid-list people jumping over into this system that it's not nearly as big a deal or a career killer as it used to be. Your mileage will vary if you want to jump into, say, Simon & Schuster hardcovers. But in general, as far as the audience is concerned, it's getting to be normal. Now, a few examples. One of the big, I don't know if spokesman is quite the right word, but one of the big proponents of print-on-demand is a fellow named Joe Conrath. That jaconrath.blogspot.com. If you want to read up on this, go to that one. You need to scroll down a little bit. He's having a lot of guest posts these days. But he is one to throw out numbers when he has them of what kind of business he's doing. He can get a little bit repetitive, and he does come off as having an axe to grind. But he's been very successful doing this, and he's not afraid of sharing his data. He says he's got $1.6 million in self-published earnings since 2009. Primarily e-books. He does do some print-on-demand, but it's not really the driver of his income. Primarily, he's a mystery writer who's had some forays into horror and some success with that. Now, what gets interesting is when you see the mainstream press starting to try and pick up the self-publishers, St. Martin's Press is having a little bit of luck with this. There's a young lady named Amanda Hocking, came out of nowhere, early 20s. Started writing adult paranormal romance being a huge category for ebooks, and sold a million of these by 2009. And I think that was maximum 4 years worth of output, probably three. Another person is a fellow I know over at Esquire and MTV named Marty Beckerman. He published a parody of self-help books called The Hemingway, Ernest Hemingway Teaching You How to Be a Real Man. St. Martin's has acquired the first young adult line from Hocking and the Hemingway book, engaged the authors to expand the content a little bit, and has republished them as mainstream bookstore editions. So the flow has also reversed. It's not just people starting out and people losing their publishing contracts and going out on their own, and now seeing mainstream publishing realizing that there are legitimate followings being built here, going in, picking up the self-publishers and putting them into the mainstream distribution channels. This is not to say you're not in the mainstream channels, but typically speaking, self-published works choose to be non-returnable and therefore aren't on bookstore shelves. Finally, we got the newspaper ebook. A lot of the publishers, newspaper publishers, the Tribune Company in particular, like to repackage their articles. Hot topics, current events. The picture there is Jesse Jackson Jr., who is on his way to Club Fed as we speak, I believe. If you have a series of articles on a topic, you just throw them all in an ebook. It could be manually selecting the articles. It could be database generated. Throw them in, put them up for sale. Sometimes it's an affinity program, so if you have a subscription, we'll give them to you for free. And finally, we've got the Leave Behind. You make a custom catalog geared specifically to the client, print it up. It's a one-off. You leave it. I've heard some stories locally about artists selling high-end work. They create a small book, high-end paper, good printing of other pieces of their art, leave that as a piece of sales material for whoever bought their art. Basically, you customize your offering to the client, print it up as a one-off or a very small batch, and leave it behind. Very easy to do these days. And I think I'll hand it over to Roland now.
Okay, well, thanks. What we'll do is, guys, if you would, please key in questions. And what I'm going to do is Roland's going to take a little different tact and really look at it from a segmented perspective. And he's done a tremendous amount of work in the educational and professional publishing segment. So what you'll hear is his perspectives on where the world of customization fits in the realm of educational and professional publishing. Roland, take it away.
Thank you, Barbara, and good day to everyone. I hope your day is as gorgeous as it is here in the Northeast. My name is Roland Oceanbine. I'm a consultant. My practice is focused on strategies and technologies employed by information publishing and technology companies. Clients include educational, professional, and reference publishers, publishing services providers, information providers, industry investment firms, nonprofits, state and federal government agencies, and typical of the kinds of projects that we would get involved in would be, say, helping a client vet and plan a new business venture or initiative, helping a client expand into an adjacent or complementary market, helping implement a challenging strategic plan, building and testing a prototype. So we're going to take a look today, a broad brush look at custom publishing applications and opportunities in the world of educational and professional publishing. And I want to first of all stress that this is a really broad look because educational and professional publishing markets are large and they're complex. You know, just the K-12 side, for instance, on a global basis is some estimates say it's about a $13 billion market, about $5.5 billion here in the U.S., and about 80% of that, 70 to 80% is derived from print. So it's a big market, and as I say, we're only going to touch the surface. So what I want to do today is, in summary, sort of summary outline, talk about some of the major drivers as we see them, benefits to publishers and to service providers, some of the publisher initiatives that are out there now in the custom publishing world, some of the platforms that are being used, some of the printers that are involved, and also sort of a kind of a little bit of a look to the future. So, one of the major drivers, as we see them, you know, the sort of holy grail in educational publishing these days is the idea of personalized learning. And, you know, we think this is a major driver in the sort of custom publishing world, especially in K-12. Adaptive, differentiated instructional techniques and methodologies that are responding to the demonstrated competencies of the learner. Real-time assessment and remediation. This frees the teacher for individualized and personalized support, and in every aspect it sort of creates a custom learning, customized learning experience, as the chart says there, just enough, just in time, and just for me. An example of that is the Pearson One-to-One Learning Solutions group that's fairly new, and it's designed to provide sort of a, you know, comprehensive solutions-oriented approach to education. Another driver, series of drivers really are the sort of diverse curriculum requirements that you see around the country and around the world. And again, this is probably more on the K-12 side than it is in higher ed or professional. 22 states in this country have a sort of statewide review and purchasing process called the adoption process. Some of the larger states such as Texas and Florida and California have considerable influence, although I will say that that influence has been sort of lessening in recent years with sort of looser spending restrictions and the increasing prevalence of electronically delivered material. Still, there is a need to customize on a mass scale. I'm showing here a Texas Algebra 2 version, for instance. States and local and regional entities have their own specific curriculum frameworks and curriculum requirements, and textbook publishers in particular have spent years figuring out the sort of processes and business models to be able to satisfy that. Those are sort of large-scale customizations, I will say. For instance, if you look at Texas, you've got something like 350,000 students per grade level, that's a pretty big market. If you get 20% of that market and you're printing that number of 70,000 textbooks, that's still quite a lot of customized books. Also, many states have high-stakes threshold exams, such as the New York Regents exam or the MCAS or FCAS tests in Massachusetts and Florida as examples. Those are really all sort of custom publishing applications. Common Core is another one. The Common Core State Standards Initiative you probably heard of are initiatives that have been widespread adoption around the country in English language arts and math, especially English language arts. Is sort of less knowledge-based and more competency-based, and there is a growing need for sort of a custom set bundles of materials to satisfy the requirements that are coming through on the new Common Core State Standards. Global markets also is an area of increasing importance and also demands levels of customization. In these markets, there's also a need to print locally where possible to save on shipping costs. But a lot of publishers, the major publishers in particular, are seeing, you know, because U.S. growth is slow at best in educational publishing, they've turned a lot of attention and resources toward expanding in the global markets. And pedagogy. Let's just talk about pedagogy for a moment in K-12, and I think Barbara actually mentioned this a little bit at the top. In all areas, but again, especially in K-12, the shift to sort of a digital editorial workflow. In other words, everything is sort of in a digital environment from the get-go, from authoring and through the publishing process. It has enabled the ability to customize under a publisher's control, but it has also enabled customers to customize for themselves. So the end user can define and specify and direct the aggregation of content to produce products that meet their own specific needs. Beyond what we just talked about a moment ago in terms of the state adoptions, there are also a lot of smaller entities, regional consortia, for instance, or large school districts, sometimes even individual school districts or charter schools that have unique needs that a publisher can now economically satisfy. And this article here just talks about a school district in California where a publisher is sort of jointly developing the curriculum for them. On the higher ed side, same thing applies. This has sort of been probably one of the hotbed areas of customization and custom book publishing for quite a while now. It's been a real growth driver for, 5 or 10 years, starting with course packs and growing into sort of the more sophisticated platforms that we see now that support a mixing of content from a variety of sources, such as books and journals and papers and electronic sources, into a book that can be used for, 25 copies in the classroom or even down to, again, the holy grail, the copy of one. College professors are, in general, I think, more demanding than, say, school teachers are in terms of establishing their scope and sequence for their own learning materials. And in many subject areas as well, currency is important, so that the latest data, the latest news, or the most recent research is important to include in the course materials. In addition, you know, the growth of online courses has been a significant influence. The growth has been spectacular. It's been estimated that, you know, one-third of all college students take at least one online course in an academic year now. And this has given rise to the sort of notion of blended learning in which you have, you know, sort of 24/7 access to an online resource as well as your local print resource that is often customized to supplement what is on the what is in the online course. You can see in this chart here that came from a BSG seminar earlier this year that something like 17% is estimated of all higher ed textbooks revenues are today derived from custom publishing applications.
I have just a real quick question that came in. You mentioned authoring tools in the K-12 space, mm-hmm. Roland, and are most publishers developing their own, or are they using outside systems?
Well, that's a good question, and we're going to address that in a moment.
Okay.
I would say generally the larger publishers are doing this in-house with in-house developed systems. Some of them
so like
started
a Pearson
with,
or
exactly the Pearsons, McGraws, and Cengage of the world. They in many cases started with off-the-shelf licensed systems from outside, but have, I think over time, my sense is have, you know, redeveloped those systems to their own specific needs and to their own sort of competitive advantage. There are, however, and we'll talk about these, some sort of, you know, off-the-shelf customizable systems, platforms, publishing platforms that are available to the mid and smaller-sized publisher.
One other quick question that came in, and I'm going to just kind of build out a little bit on it, but one of the questions that came in for you, Ron, was what are some of the best examples of interactive educational digital books that are available to view? And I look at that kind of twofold. We're starting to see a lot of interactive elements added to print books, things like augmented reality and QR codes that link to video while you're, you know, reading a textbook. What are your comments on that?
Yeah, I was going to speak to that in a few minutes as well.
Well, then I'll give you a second to get to it. Sorry
about
that.
Yeah, that's okay. There are companies like Inkling, for instance, and No, and others that are offering sort of, yeah, they're more on the e-book side, I would say, but they do sort of surround the basic e-book with a bunch of tools and features that allow everything from sort of, you know, social sharing to notes to, you know, the incorporation of sort of rich media assets and all kinds of things. And, yeah, so companies, I guess I would point to the companies as an example, such as Inkling and No.
Okay.
All right, so another one of these sort of drivers is in the area of what are popularly called OERs, Open Educational Resources. They are freely available text and images and videos, assessments, the whole nine yards that are available mostly online and have been developed by universities or by professors or by teachers. Some of these are university-sanctioned. you know, for instance, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but there's, you know, the massive open online courses, the MOOCs. Most are available to anybody through a Creative Commons license. Some of them are attribution-only, non-commercial. Some of them include commercial applications if you've done a license with the creator. And they can be organized into, you know, libraries and peer review. Some colleges and universities are offering complete courses now that include these open educational resources. EdX, for instance, is a new venture service that is a collaboration with MIT, Harvard, and Berkeley and University of Texas, I think, that is you know, a series of interactive online classes that include these open educational resources. And this is a big impact. And how does it relate to custom book publishing? Well, it relates, as you'll see in a minute, because publishers recognizing this, I think, in some ways as an opportunity more than a threat, have begun to incorporate the selection of open educational resources into their custom textbook builds, and we'll talk about that in a second. Next one, Todd mentioned this, and I'll just say another word or two about this. Advances in content management. This may be more of an enabler, I guess, than a driver, but you know, the state of technology with regard to content management these days is very advanced. 10 years ago, this was sort of leading edge, but today it's kind of commonplace. And the ability to identify and parse and chunk and manipulate and reconstitute content in different media is just is extraordinary. And it enables all kinds of publishing, custom publishing applications that, as Barb said, only your, you know, limited only by your imagination. And it also makes possible sort of a whole new kind of revenue stream for publishers, which is licensing content to other publishers to be able to, you know, chunk and recombine into all new products in different ways. And so to see the advancements, for instance, in complex content management and customization in real time in adaptive publishing, I think you only need to look at something like, you know, how a fantasy, the technology that is that runs a fantasy football league. To see how sort of real-time, you know, adaptive custom publishing can work. Another driver, print to digital and product to service. And again, this might be an enabler, but I think it's a really important one. And that is that, you know, publishers today, as anybody associated with publishing, whether you're a publishing services provider or a publisher yourself, you're going through a fairly major strategic transitional phase. There's just no two ways about it. And one of those generally is, you know, considered the sort of print-to-digital transition. And the other one, a lot of publishers are now recognizing that they that the future really is in services and solutions. It's less about products, and it's more about sort of combining products and content and technology and services and consulting and other things into sort of a solutions orientation. And that's what schools and colleges, universities, and professional applications are looking for. This impacts every facet of the organization, really, from authoring to editorial to sales, the whole way through. And a lot of it really is about customization. I mean, a lot of it is about moving away from the sort of big, mammoth, kind of static product line that you revise in edition after edition after edition to a dynamic, repository-based content pool that is then output in a variety of forms. Let me find my cursor here. Here we go. Benefits to publishers and to publishing services providers. Digital workflows obviously enable all kinds of customization, which in turn enables new revenue streams, whether that's you know, capturing new purchase dollars or expanding into complementary markets or licensing content that we mentioned, creating whole new product lines or service offerings on the fly. It's creative reuse of content. It's enabling the customer themselves to define the product that they want, which in turn sort of guarantees a much higher sell-through. I mean, if I'm creating the product that just I want, I'm going to buy it. There's a very high probability that I'm going to buy that product. And it reduces the impact of used books, particularly in the higher ed college market, that's had such an impact over the last couple of decades. Also, you know, the idea of sort of a strategy around customization complements the move from a product to service and also is just a component of a sort of the larger kind of digital strategic posture that publishers are now reviewing. So let me just mention in a few minutes here a couple of publisher initiatives. The four on the left are really the larger publishers, Pearson, McGraw, Wiley, and Cengage. And these publishers offer the capability in their own, you know, Pearson Learning Solutions, McGraw Create, the Wiley Custom Select, and the Cengage Custom Solutions. Offer their customers the ability to browse through libraries, vast libraries of digital content in many subject areas. In most cases, you're talking hundreds, if not thousands, of textbooks and thousands, if not tens of thousands, of articles and journals and things like that. You can drag and drop content into a build tool. You can organize and reorganize it the way you want it. You can preview it, personalize it with the cover that you want, order the exact number of copies that you need in either perfect or spiral bound, or you can order it in ebook format as well. Some of these services will allow you to include your own content and also to be able to offer a compilation that you've done for sale with royalty to others. Some of them also offer other media types such as video and online and cartoon type materials if you're doing going out in the ebook format. A couple of the others I just want to mention. Academic Pub, I think, is a fascinating one. This is sort of more of a course pack maker, claims to be the largest collection of chunked content in the world, offers millions of pre-cleared articles and textbooks and chapters and scholarly research and cases, and it's searchable by topic and ISBN and over 90 disciplines, and you can come out, have an output in either print or digital formats. And if it's print, it's going to be POD, and it's probably going to be short run. Flat World has had a lot of press over the last few years. It's sort of an exciting new company, although it's taking kind of a new direction these days. But it's taking an existing textbook that they have off on offer and then allowing you, the customer, to personalize it, to rearrange it, to add to it, to delete sections from it, and then you can purchase either a online or print version as an output. They started out with a business model that suggested that they would offer the online version of these personalized textbooks for free, and then you would, if you wanted the print version, you would pay for that, but they've now gone to a fee base for everything. CourseSmart, No, and Inkling are really all ebook textbook providers. CourseSmart is a collaboration of a lot of the major publishers. The effort there is to sort of offer a whole comprehensive library. And No and Inkling are ones that we mentioned before that are textbook providers that offer sort of proprietary tools and features. The one I wanted to mention, though, just for a second, was Pearson Blue Sky, which is the one at the top right. It's not identified by name, but it's just as an icon. Incorporates much of the premium content that's on offer from Pearson Custom, but also includes this OER, Open Educational Resource content, as well. And it's the vastness of this OER content that Pearson is banking on that's sort of paralyzing professors and finding this difficulty in finding and this lack of a comprehensive catalog of this OER stuff. And so Pearson has built a tool, a beta version of this thing, that with the help of Guru, a nonprofit search engine, that where an instructor can find material across both the premium and also the free world of educational content, and then build a custom product that, again, is either available. You can also incorporate third-party content, but it's available electronically or in print. Very interesting stuff.
Ron, I have one other quick question somebody just asked, and having done a fair amount of work in the space, it's kind of interesting, but are there any companies out there that can help a publisher port material into some of the LMS systems where there's a huge emphasis in the university marketplace, especially for, distance learning?
These are service providers, for instance?
Yeah, any vendors that could help get customized content into LMS systems at universities.
Yeah, there are, and we might want to – I'm probably better to do that offline. Off the top of my head, I'm not coming up with any, but there's a whole – I think there's a whole
We'll take the individual's email and make sure we get back to them. Thank you.
Sure. Just a quick mention here of the platform providers that we mentioned earlier. These are publishing systems, mostly in use in the higher ed, professional, academic, and scholarly space, but they're aimed at mid- and smaller-sized publishers and academic institutions. They're off-the-shelf applications, can support a variety of content types, such as books, journals, etc., have a content management component, have a customer access component. They can be branded with a publisher's front end, allowing end users, just like the big publishers, to browse and select and arrange and aggregate and do all the things. And these can also support many different business models, such as including things like subscription access. But you can output to a custom print, you can output to an ebook, you can access with subscriptions. And some publishers are even bundling a bunch of products together in different databases, subject area databases, such as psychology or car repair or neuroscience or something. Very interesting, a whole new market. So these are four companies that are sort of in that space. Highwire is really not so much a company as a service that's through Stanford University. So just to kind of wrap up the last two things here, I just wanted to mention some of these printers. A number of print service providers in this space, in the higher ed and educational and publishing space. I don't want to go through these individually because each of these companies has strengths in certain areas. Some offer end-to-end integrated print, digital, and wholesale and distribution services. Some offer repository services. Some support both print and e-book. And some of them are more sort of POD-oriented. Many offer digital inkjet capability. Some even offer sort of in-warehouse digital print solutions. A real sort of vital sort of marketplace in this area. So finally, I know we're running up on our time here.
We're good.
What to look for. Custom publishing is is an important component in the educational, custom book publishing, an important component in the educational and professional space. There are a lot of publishers engaged. There are many new startups. There's a lot of action in this space in tandem with the growth of the digital workflows and repositories and databases that we mentioned. As the world becomes more and more digital, the explosion of discoverable content, the premium side and the free side, provides a lot of challenges and opportunities in this space. There are many, the tools for discovery and assembly and manipulation, the content management tools, as we talked about, are advancing at a huge rate. There's an increasing value as more and more digital content becomes online to discover. There's more and more value that's being recognized today in the connections between what, among and through what used to be sort of disparate, siloed groups of content. And these connections have become very important. Classroom-level customization, on the print side, probably the most economic we're going to see, at least for some period of time, is customization to the classroom level. Not sure we're going to see it to the individual student in any big way. That's really on the digital side, although, one could argue that. The impact of Amazon is a big one. Amazon is, increasingly a POD printer and publisher themselves. There's a lot of implications here for warehousing and distribution. And I just want to mention in the last closing second something about Learning Resource Metadata Initiative, the Learning Registry, and the Shared Learning Collaborative. These are ways to tag, to organize, and to share metadata around learning, learning instructional materials, so that you create learning objects where the instruction, the assessment, and all the support materials around a particular sort of curriculum kernel can ride together, and it makes for creating sort of these wonderfully rich custom applications very easy. So that's sort of where I think the future is going.
I have one more quick question for you, and then I've got one for Todd that came in. The first question I've got is there a source? You mentioned a lot of new terms, terminology, a number of things. Is there a source for professional development in assisting publishers to understand how to better avail themselves of these new options? Because there's a number of new terms like inkling and know that some of our audience didn't recognize. Is there a place to go to learn about all that?
Well, there's a lot in the educational technology area. The SIIA, the Software Industries Information Association, has a lot of resources around that. The American Association of Publishers, AAP, as well, through both their school and their higher ed groups. There's a lot. If I think of some more, I'll certainly pass them along.
Okay. And then I'm going to direct this first to Todd and then to you. Todd, you published a book, and a question came in on social media. Is there any techniques that you've seen to do an effective job at marketing books through social media?
Well, over at Airbook, we're actually set up specifically for social media. We haven't started marketing this yet, but we have what we call Airbook Retail, which is directing purchases through the actual social streams. So you will tweet the link to the internal preview on our site. If you're on iPad on the Twitter app, you tap on the link, it'll take you into a preview of the book. You can go through, say, 8 pages or however many you designate. At the end of it, you'll be prompted to purchase the ebook directly. The idea with this is you empower the author a lot more if you let them run the purchasing process through their own social channels. Run it through Facebook, run it through Twitter, run it through Pinterest, Tumblr for that matter. And basically, it's a form of audience engagement. It works a little better with the authors than it does direct to publishers. When comic books, people have direct conversations with the publishers. In most other formats, the publisher's not really the one that's doing the direct conversation with the audience.
Okay.
But it's really about audience engagement when you get into the social channel.
Okay. And then just a question, and I'm going to ask Ron this. Ron, have you seen any effective use of social media for marketing books, build out awareness, peer feedback? Have you seen any techniques used specifically in the educational market?
Well, none that jump to mind, interestingly enough. I guess I'll have to think about that. There's nothing that I can think of right off the top of my head. I mean, most of the marketing directly is coming from through publishers that I see, or through the educational institutions themselves. In terms of sort of peer, you know, sort of student to student kind of social.
Or I'm even thinking professor to professor.
Yeah, you'd think there would be some clearinghouse, wouldn't you, or recommendation.
Well, it's someone who played professor for a little while. That isn't so much social media as that's going to be offline on boards and private emails.
Yeah. Just an aside on this, and I will, you know, what we have seen in some instances, and I'm just going to throw this out, and it's starting to take hold in a number of industries, but is where, you know, what you've got is that publisher who's got a couple of loyal followers, and what they do is they ask for referrals, and they'll figure out some form of a reward referral type program. So if I've got, I'm going to pick an example. If I've got a book on sociology, and I know 25 other sociology professors, and it's a great book, they'll figure out some kind of a reward system if you refer it to other people on your LinkedIn network, and there are tools actually available today that help monitor that. So some of the bigger houses are actually starting to use that relative to rewards, referral rewards. There's a number of systems, one called Social Twist, one called Ducky, that let you do that kind of application.
Mm-hmm.
So just a FYI for, but you know, your point is a very valid one, Todd, which is, you know, that networking aspect, whether it's an email or it's telling a friend, is a big deal. And so what people are trying to do is get folks to use social media to do some of that. I have one other real quick question, and it's for both of you, and I'll start with Todd and then turn it over to Roland. What do you see as the biggest single customization challenge for you know, an author / publisher?
One of the things we're seeing a little bit of is limitation of size and customization. You have a fairly small set of options when you're doing stuff with graphics involved, because that's something I'm very involved with right now. High-end photography, not easy to do print-on-demand.
Yep.
Coffee table books, not easy to do. Color is coming around. You can do a lot of things with it, but the really high-end stuff, offset, is still a better option most of the time.
Okay. What do you see as the biggest challenges out there for your educational publishers, Ron?
Yeah, I would agree. I would agree with that too. I would also say that making the right content discoverable quickly and easily to a customer is a big one. And then, you know, the challenge in education is eventually going to be down to sort of how do you get down to an economic business model that works at very, very low order quantities, like 1 or 3 or 5 or something like that. And then another challenge that publishers are having, I think, is just a more of a sort of internal business challenge. As things go more and more POD, more and more custom, and more digital, a lot of publishers are sitting there with big warehouses. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of square feet of capital, you know, of capital costs sunk in large warehouses. So it's, you know, they're going through a lot of different transitions.
Great. Well, thank you. And I want to just wrap up with a couple of final thoughts. And that the first one is that, you know, I think what you're seeing and what you heard from both Todd and from Roland is that, you know, the market demand is there. Customers are looking for immediate content, personal content, relevant content, easy access. And they want it their way. And sometimes it's an e-book, and sometimes it's a printed book. And you have to be able to move seamlessly between different media types. But I think the opportunity abounds. And, you know, people want to tell their story. They want to build their course materials. They want to build their photo book. They want to share their recipes. They want to tell their own children's story. And so those things are all available in the marketplace today, and the technology is really ready. We may have had some discussion on a coffee table book. I will tell you that when you start looking at the photo books produced by companies like Shutterfly using digital print technology, that's pretty powerful print technology. You're also seeing a whole new number of different print formats and finishing capabilities. Clearly, the internet has taken off. Digital photography has taken off. Color's getting better. We're seeing more offers of templated designs. You heard Roland talk about content library. And you've also got, you know, a changing nature of what the book means to the reader. But I think the bottom line on all of this is that opportunities to address both risk and relevance are readily available. So I'd like to take a second to thank both of our speakers. And the other thing is, if you have a question that we didn't get to today, feel free to key it in and we'll get back to you. I would also appreciate it if you take just a minute to fill out a survey in terms of your feedback on this webinar. Thank you so much and have a great day.